Good morning. 7112th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is cooperation between the United Nations and regional and sub-regional organizations in maintaining international peace and security. Agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, first invite Baroness Catherine Ashton, High Representative of Foreign Affairs, High Representative of Foreign Affairs and Security Policy of the European Union to participate in the meeting. It's so decided. Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. I wish warmly welcome Secretary General, His Excellency Mr. Ban Ki-moon, and I now give him the floor.
Your Excellency, Minister Linas Linkevicius, and President of Security Council, distinguished members of the Security Council, Your Excellency Baroness Catherine Ashton, European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I commend you, Mr. President, and the Government of Lithuania for convening this timely discussion on cooperation between United Nations and regional organizations, focusing in particular on the European Union. We are honored to welcome High Representative Lady Ashton. Excellencies, the principles of establishing stronger partnership with the regional organizations is embedded in the very DNA of the United Nations. With a great vision and foresight, Chapter 8 of the Charter lays out the critical role of regional organizations in maintaining international peace and security. Today, we know more than ever before that the effectiveness of the United Nations rests in large measure on our cooperation with regional bodies. We draw on our expertise. We maximize impact by coordinating our efforts. Pooling resources and pursuing a common approach is not only efficient, it is essential. Conflict prevention, mediation, crisis management, peacekeeping, conflict resolution, and peacebuilding are complex endeavors. No single country or organization can possibly meet these challenges alone. That is why we have strengthened relationship with regional bodies, both to facilitate a swift response when crises erupt and to allow for long-term joint engagement. We have made important progress, including through liaison offices, joint envoys, and cooperation agreement. Joint mediation deployments have become more common, allowing the international community to put forward a united front. Our cooperation with the African Union has made a difference in places like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Mali, and Somalia. The United Nations is keen to deepen the partnership with the AU peace and security architecture. I also commend the mediation efforts of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development in South Sudan. In Asia, UN cooperation with ASEAN has grown significantly since we signed a Memorandum of Understanding in 2007. We look forward to working with this new Institute for Peace and Reconciliation launched in December. We are engaging in extensive collaboration with the Organization of American States in areas such as mediation and dialogue, as well as the fight against illicit trafficking. The partnership with the League of Arab States has been essential for our efforts to support inclusive political processes in the Middle East and North Africa and work for peace in Syria. And of course, our cooperation with the European Union stretches across our agenda and around the world. Throughout its history, the European Union has taken pioneering forward-looking steps in promoting cooperation among nations, both within and increasingly beyond its borders. The EU's many and generous contributions to the UN embody the kind of multidimensional approach that is needed to foster sustainable peace and development. The United Nations and European Union increasingly work side by side on the ground in peacekeeping and civilian crisis management operations and through preventive diplomacy. The European Union has also been a valuable partner to the UN Peacebuilding Commission, a champion of human rights, and a steadfast partner in promoting the Millennium Development Goals, advancing gender equality, and tackling climate change. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the topic of today's debate could not be more timely. The United Nations and its regional partners face an urgent test. The dark clouds of mass atrocities and sectarian cleansing loom over the Central African Republic. Public lynchings, mutilations, and other horrendous acts of violence are spreading mayhem and fear. All Central Africans have been victims, Muslims and Christians alike. Most recently, there have been large-scale attacks on Muslims in towns such as Bouali, Boyali, and Bosembl, where peacekeepers have not been able to deploy. I am deeply concerned by the cycle of revenge and reprisals. Entire Muslim communities are fleeing for their lives. Some have called it an exodus of historic scale. Antonio Guterres, the High Commissioner for Refugees, was in the CAR this week and described a humanitarian catastrophe of unspeakable proportions. The local Red Cross reported finding a mass grave in Bangui, public records confirming identities and land ownership are being deliberately destroyed. Citizens and officials are fanning the flames through hate speech. We must do our utmost to prevent further atrocities and retaliatory violence, in particular the widespread and coordinated targeting of Muslim communities. And we must understand what else is at risk. The very fabric of society, woven over generations, is being ripped apart. Communities that have no history of violent conflict are on a course that, if left unchecked, could lead to decades of debilitating conflict. Peace, security, human rights, development, everything we at the United Nations stand for and seek to promote is under assault. We must live up to the promises made around this table to act swiftly and robustly in the face of such bloodshed. We cannot claim to care about mass atrocities, crimes, and then shrink from what it means to actually prevent them. Our commitment to protect civilians is only as meaningful as the political, military, and financial muscle deployed to defend them. Our responsibility is clear. We must stand with the people of the Central African Republic. I commend the Economic Community of Central African States and African Union for their intensive efforts to address the crisis and for the establishment of the African-led International Support Mission in the CAR, MISCA. I pay tribute to the courage and determination of the MISCA forces doing their utmost to stem the violence and protect the civilians. I appeal to the international community to urgently provide MISCA with the support it so clearly needs to save lives now. I thank Government of France for deploying its forces, and I look forward to the forthcoming military contributions by the European Union to be coordinated with the MISCA operation. I'm committed to do everything in my power to prevent further atrocities and reduce the risk of de facto partition of the country. Now we must act together. We must act decisively, and we must act now to prevent the worst. As the Secretary General of the United Nations, I am duty-bound to bring to the Council's attention my best possible advice on how to address threats to international peace and security. I intend to return to the Council on Tuesday with recommendations for containing and then ending this crisis. I look forward to discussing with you what it will take to urgently curtail the violence, save lives, protect the human rights, support the delivery of humanitarian assistance, and strengthen command and control of the forces of the ground. This will be a crucial opportunity to fortify our collective efforts, a chance to show that cooperation between the UN, AU, EU, and others can help the people of the CAR at their time of need. As we heighten our efforts to protect people, we must also pursue accountability for human rights violations. The International Commission of Inquiry, mandated by the Security Council, will become operational this month. I welcome the decision of the International Criminal Court to open a preliminary investigation into the violence. The international response is building strength, but does not yet match what is required. It is critical to do everything we can to support efforts of President Catherine Samba Panza in her courageous efforts to stabilize the situation, promote dialogue, and find political solutions. The international community must work together with the international authorities, religious leaders, and all stakeholders to strengthen reconciliation efforts in an inclusive and transparent processes. Let us pledge here and now to ensure that the people of CAR have the lifeline of support and protection that they need. Let us commit to the strongest possible cooperation and coordination between the United Nations and AU and European Union. Let us show what solidarity and concerted action can achieve for the people of the Central African Republic. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Secretary General, for a statement. Now may invite to take the floor Baroness Catherine Ashton, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Thank you so much for inviting me to address the Security Council today. Can I congratulate the Republic of Lithuania for its presidency and its membership of the Council, the first time that you serve on this distinguished body, as well as to Chad, Chile, Jordan, and Nigeria for their election to the Security Council. May I pay tribute to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, a good friend and a good partner. The European Union has always supported your leadership, your efforts to reform the UN and make it more effective, and the use of your good offices to mediate, engage, and achieve progress in conflict and crisis situations that are of concern to all of us. By doing this, I want to reiterate the strong commitment of the European Union to support and work for effective multilateralism with the United Nations at its core, in search of lasting solutions to critical international peace and security challenges. Our contribution is threefold. Our direct involvement in international negotiations on behalf of the international community. Our capacity to implement a comprehensive approach and use a wide range of tools to solve crises. And our close work with our international and regional partners, where only collective efforts can deliver results. Mr. President, in my role as High Representative, I'm responsible for leading on the Iranian nuclear issue. Based on the mandate I received from the Security Council, together with the E3+3, we are engaging in intensive diplomatic efforts to seek a negotiated solution that meets the international community's concerns on the Iranian nuclear program. Our strength and our credibility derives from the unity of the E3+3 P5+1, but also from the support received from the international community. I'm grateful for the constant support of the UN Security Council, and I also appreciate the progress that has been achieved between Iran and the IAEA. We are now implementing the joint plan of action agreed in Geneva last November, which is the first confidence-building step to address the most urgent concerns on the Iranian nuclear program. But it is only the first step, and we will start discussions next week in Vienna aimed at achieving a comprehensive and final settlement. Mr. President, I feel proud of our work last year facilitating the dialogue between Belgrade and Pristina. Historical progress was made in the normalization of relations between the two sides. The Council had the opportunity to hear Prime Minister Dačić and Prime Minister Tači addressing the Council on Monday of this week, and you will know from them how important and how positive this work has been for their people, for the stability of the Western Balkans region, and for its European future. From the beginning of the dialogue, I have facilitated 22 meetings between the Prime Ministers, meetings that have lasted in total 226 hours. The last meeting took place just 2 days ago. This has been a process with concrete results that have changed people's everyday lives on the ground. The first agreement of principles governing the normalization of relations reached last April was a turning point in their relations. Its implementation included the successful holding of Kosovo-wide local elections, including for the first time in northern Kosovo, and the integration of all security and justice structures into the Kosovo legal framework. Because of this progress, the EU was able to respond by opening accession negotiations with Serbia and launching negotiations for a stabilization and association agreement with Kosovo. In the future, the dialogue will become more and more part of the EU integration process for both parties. But the message to Pristina and Belgrade today is it is crucial that the dialogue continues and that they maintain the same commitment. The European Union and my own commitment remains as strong as ever. Apart from the clear benefits for each side, we hope this dialogue can and should be an inspiration for positive changes, for a new momentum in other parts of the Western Balkans. I think particularly of events in Bosnia-Herzegovina today. Mr. President, a particular strength of the European Union is its ability to use a broad toolbox of instruments and policies that we, collectively with our member states, have at our disposal. We strive to put into practice in close cooperation with international, regional and local partners our work on all phases of conflict, from prevention and early warning to conflict management, post-conflict transition and sustainable development. This comprehensive approach has best been exemplified in dealing with crises in Africa, where our cooperation with the United Nations and the African Union has been instrumental in achieving results. In Somalia, we work with our partners and make use of a wide range of tools and resources in support of stability, security, and development. With the help of the EU Atalanta mission, piracy has dropped by about 95% in about 3 years. We're helping now to build up maritime capacity and to train Somalian security forces. We're deeply engaged diplomatically and politically, and as Somalia's biggest donor, we are a key partner for development assistance. The new deal that the European Union, Somalia, and partners set out in September last year forms the basis of our engagement with the country to accompany Somalia's transition. We continue to be a steadfast supporter of the UN mission in the country. I also urge everyone to continue to support AMISOM and the Somali National Armed Forces as they step up their operations against Al-Shabaab. One thing is certain, Mr. President, as we seek to empower Somalia politically, we must do so by empowering its institutions and its people across the country. That means we have to link together political processes, security and justice systems, economic growth and service delivery so that we empower and enable the Somalian government to carry out its sovereign functions. Mr. President, I want to thank the Secretary General for his personal commitment to the Sahel region, and I welcome the UN Sahel strategy. And the Secretary General's mission to Mali, where my colleague, the Development Commissioner Andris Piebalgs, also participated, was an important signal. So, of course, was the visit of this council earlier this month. We have demonstrated from the beginning of this crisis our willingness to help Mali and the countries in the wider Sahel-Sahara region. We've provided humanitarian assistance to Mali, up to 550 million euros in 2013 and 2014. We have pledged 1,028 billion in development aid to Mali that has already started to be committed. Our two crisis management missions in Niger and Mali have delivered encouraging results, but it will take time and determination to build capacity. A complementary civilian mission is under preparation that will help to provide support to the internal security forces of Mali as they fight terrorism and illegal trafficking, while contributing to the reform of the security sector at large. Mr. President, as the Secretary General has said, we remain deeply concerned about the heavy civilian casualties, massive displacement of people, human rights violations, and a worsening of the humanitarian situation in the Central African Republic. It is imperative for the international community to act to enable a lasting solution to be found. African countries and France have responded swiftly through the deployment of MISCA and Sangaris forces. We will play our part in helping the Central African Republic by sending a crisis management mission to contribute to stability on the ground and the protection of civilians in the Bangui area. Our aim must be to ensure humanitarian aid can reach those most in need. To re-establish the rule of law, a gendarmerie component will be embedded in the European force, which will facilitate cooperation on the ground. In parallel, we are setting up programmes aimed at a swift reinstallation of the judiciary system, fully respecting local ownership. This is a crucial component. It will help us to sustain local progress on ending impunity to perpetrators of violations and enabling reconciliation. I believe the task is immense. We'll work very closely with African-led MISCA and with the French forces and provide a bridging operation towards the proposed handover to the African Union, with which we've established good cooperation, which continues. Should this council decide that a full UN peacekeeping operation is best suited to take on this task, we will be happy to work with you to ensure a well-coordinated international support operation. Mr. President, more and more, the most difficult challenges to international peace and security require that we join forces. We're therefore working very closely with regional, international, and local partners. The disastrous conflict in Syria continues. We are determined to support the efforts to try and find a way out of this terrible situation. The Geneva negotiations, I pay tribute to Lakhdar Brahimi, are a crucial first step if we're to see confidence built around tangible results and relief for the population. This will be challenging. As Valerie Amos reminded the Council yesterday, with 9.3 million Syrians in need of assistance, half of them children, we are reaching the limits of what the international community can do. Neighbouring countries are sheltering close to 3 million refugees. We will continue to support them, but the dangers for Lebanon and for Jordan, as well as the threats to the territorial integrity of Iraq, are real and increasing. At the recent conference hosted by Kuwait, we pledged an additional 550 million euros for the relief effort, raising its overall contribution to 2.6 billion. Yet the UN unprecedented fundraising appeal of 6.5 billion, of which only a third has yet been reached, clearly shows the urgency of settling the conflict in order to move forward. But we will continue our humanitarian efforts. We will continue to press all parties to allow the delivery of humanitarian aid and medical care countrywide and to allow civilians to evacuate. We are deeply concerned that there are delays in the transfer process of the chemical weapons out of Syria. We are strong supporters of the Secretary-General's efforts. We and our member states have provided significant contributions to the OPCW with armoured vehicles and with contributions to the Trust Fund. Mr. President, sustainable peace has often proved elusive in the Middle East. We want to commend the leadership shown by President Abbas and Prime Minister Netanyahu, and we fully support the tireless efforts of US Secretary of State John Kerry. we stand ready to support and contribute substantially to post-conflict arrangements to ensure the sustainability and implementation of a peace agreement. In December, the EU offered an unprecedented package of European political, economic, and security support to the Palestinians and Israelis in the context of a final status agreement. That includes a special privileged partnership with the EU, aiming, amongst other things, to increase access to European markets, closer cultural and scientific links, facilitation of trade and investment, promotion of business relations, all of this in the event of a final peace agreement. It is a genuine and tangible European offer, and we look forward to a future relationship between ourselves and the two parties to help to develop a positive interdependence and a new mutually beneficial peaceful relationship. The role of other regional actors is essential. I want to reiterate the strategic importance of the Arab Peace Initiative in securing a wider peace. But for the negotiations to succeed, there needs to be an increase in mutual trust between the parties. Any violence must be avoided at all costs. Incidents of violence in the occupied territory, continuous rocket fire to Israel, the deteriorating humanitarian situation in Gaza, incitement as well as actions that undermine the status quo of the holy sites, they all push agreement further away. In that context, of course, I cannot but deplore the continuing Israeli expansion of settlements. They are legal under international law and they constitute a significant obstacle to peace. But, Mr. President, there are many other issues of concern to the European Union which may not be on top of your agenda but are on the top of mine, and it would be remiss of me not to mention just a couple of them here. Especially at the moment, we are worried about the situation in our own neighbourhood, especially Ukraine and Egypt. We feel a special responsibility to help these countries find a way out of their current difficulties. I have been to Ukraine 3 times in the last 2 months and have seen people who've been standing on the streets of Kiev for the last 85 days in support of the country's modernisation and progress. I commend the peaceful nature of the demonstrations and I condemn strongly expressions of violence that have occurred and continue to occur in the country. Those who've committed violence need to be brought to justice. Those who carry the responsibility to protect the Ukrainian people's right to free speech and assembly need to ensure these rights are safeguarded in compliance with Ukraine's own international commitments. We hope a negotiated way out of the current political crisis can be found soon. The elements for that are in place. We stand ready to work with all parties within Ukraine and with the relevant international organisations to facilitate a solution. However, this has to be Ukrainian-owned and a Ukrainian-led process. Democracy building, too, in Egypt requires hard work, commitment and compromise. The aim to achieve democratic, transparent and accountable institutions that protect all citizens of Egypt and their fundamental rights. 3 years have passed since Egyptian women and men from all walks of life rose up calling for freedom, human dignity, social justice and better economic conditions. Throughout that period, the European Union has stood by the Egyptian people. We follow with great concern the violent events and loss of life before and during the constitutional referendum and on the occasion of the third anniversary of the Egyptian Revolution. I've condemned in the clearest possible terms all acts of violence as well as terrorist attacks. I've also condemned the disproportional use of force and supported the call for an investigation. We are concerned about the detention of political dissidents and journalists. Freedom of expression, assembly and peaceful protest must be safeguarded. We believe the ratification of the new constitution by the referendum is a positive step implementing the roadmap, especially the human rights chapter including freedom of assembly, expression and women's rights. The constitution should be applied in a way that ensures full civilian control over the branches of government. But the process was flawed by the lack of a truly representative drafting process and the lack of political space for dissenting opinion. We welcome the announcement of elections, which should lead to a democratically elected president and a fair representation of different political views in the future parliament. We have been invited to observe the upcoming elections, and a EU election observation mission will be able to assess whether conditions are conducive for inclusion, transparency, and credible elections. We are concerned too about the deteriorating economic situation in Egypt. Economic justice and a better life for all Egyptians is a prerequisite for a stable and prosperous country. We will continue to provide socioeconomic support to the poorest and most vulnerable groups of society, and we will assist Egypt's vibrant civil society. And we stand ready to work with the people of Egypt into the future. Mr. President, this will be, I think, the last time as High Representative that I address this Council. May I thank you so much for the honour of being able to do so. I'm very proud that we are a reliable partner of the United Nations and of this esteemed Council. Thank you.
Let me thank you, Baroness Ashton, for extremely interesting, valuable briefing. Thank you very much, Cathy. Now, the Council has before it the text of a statement by the President on behalf of the Council on the subject of today's meeting. I thank the Council members for their valuable contributions to the statement. In accordance with the understanding reached among the members of the Council, I shall take it that the members of the Security Council agree to the statement, which will be issued as a document of the Security Council under the symbol SPRST 2014/4. It's so decided. I shall now make a statement on behalf of my capacity as a Minister of Foreign Affairs of Lithuania. Mr. Secretary General, Madam High Representative, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to welcome Baroness Catherine Ashton, High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, with whom we had fantastic cooperation during Lithuania's recent presidency of the European Union. Thank you, Cathy, for your briefing. We also sincerely thank UN's Secretary General for his support and contribution to the ever-expanding cooperation between the United Nations and regional organizations in general to prevent, manage, and resolve crises. Chapter 8 is relevant today as ever, and his important debate today is a vivid testimony to that. Today, both United Nations and EU operate in the ever-changing global environment where the multiple challenges can only be addressed collectively. Proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, illicit trade in small arms and light weapons, terrorism and violent extremism, horrendous violations of human rights, international humanitarian law, transnational organized crime, cybersecurity disputes over energy and natural resources, and climate change are but a few examples of global threats and risks. Yet they often manifest specific regional and local dimensions. For this reason, the knowledge of localized perspectives as well as contribution by regional and sub-regional organizations are essential for the international community to be able to effectively tackle these challenges. The interaction and synergies of United Nations and EU, as well as UN, the EU and other regional and sub-regional organizations, first and foremost, African Union, are critical in solving conflicts. They are also key for prevention, as regional organizations can be particularly helpful in an early identification of potential crisis and mediation. Over the recent years, EU-UN cooperation has grown considerably, both in terms of focus and scope. I will therefore limit myself to only a few examples and issues which define this mutually beneficial cooperation. First, humanitarian action. It remains one of the key areas of cooperation between UN and EU. EU is the world's largest humanitarian donor. By urgently responding to humanitarian crisis in close cooperation with the UN, the Union has helped to save lives in numerous conflicts and natural disaster areas. For example, Central African Republic continues to suffer from the most horrendous crimes that can befall a nation in conflict. In response, the EU has taken upon itself to maintain a regular humanitarian air service to ferry aid workers and emergency supplies to the strife-torn country, and thus complements the efforts on the ground undertaken by UN, the African Union, and other actors. Sahel region is another area where UN and EU are close partners in action. Earlier in February this year, European Commission announced that it would provide 142 million euros in humanitarian funds to the Sahel region in 2014. Likewise, the EU has been supporting life-saving activities in South Sudan, providing aid for internally displaced people and refugees. Since the end of 2011, and in direct response to the Syrian crisis, over $2 billion in aid have been provided to Syria and neighboring countries from the EU budget and its member states. We call for full and immediate implementation of presidential statement of the UN Security Council of 2nd October 2013. This crisis is testing the response capacity of the entire international aid system, aid organizations and donors alike. Lessons learned should serve as a basis for joint efforts to improve international humanitarian system even further. My country has been a consistent participant in humanitarian efforts both bilaterally and through joint EU funding. Lithuania has contributed repeatedly to alleviating the humanitarian crisis in Syria, including aid to Palestinian refugees in Syria, most recently in the Central African Republic. The second area where UN-EU cooperation continues to have an impact on the ground is crisis management and early peace building. Right now, EU is preparing for deployment of an operation in Central Africa Republic in support of MISCA and the French forces. Lithuania is about to join the efforts of the international community in Central Africa Republic, first through contributing our air assets to the operation Sangaris. My country is also contributing to EU operations off the coast of Somalia and in Mali. These operations are carried out in close coordination and complementarity with UN efforts on the ground. It's particularly encouraging that, thanks to such joint efforts, piracy off the eastern coast of Africa has dropped to the lowest level in 7 years. In Mali, Lithuania is contributing to EU training mission. Officers are part of the team that provides training and advice for the Malian Defense and Security Forces. This mission is helping to build national institutions, which will be essential for Mali to be able to defend itself as terrorism, violent extremism, and international drug trafficking continue to pose serious threats to this country on its path to recovery. Both UN and EU continue to work for a better future of Afghan people. The international community must stick to its commitments in Afghanistan, with special focus on supporting regional cooperation between Afghanistan and its neighbors, building the capacities of central and local authorities, strengthening the rule of law and respect for human rights, in particular the rights of women and girls. In its turn, Afghanistan must continue to path of comprehensive reform and democracy for the sake of future of Afghan people. Third aspect I'd like to emphasize is mediation. In this regard, I must congratulate the High Representative personally on her tireless efforts, talent, and deep understanding of the situation in the Balkan region, which has led to a breakthrough in Serbia-Kosovo relations, which is a veritable success for the entire region. Thanks to this breakthrough, Serbia and Kosovo are today on the path of European integration. As accession negotiations with Serbia and negotiations on stabilization and association agreement with Kosovo are ongoing. Another good example of UN-EU cooperation in the field of mediation, Geneva international discussions to address consequences of 2008 war in Georgia. This process is very important for security and stability in the region and must continue. Interim agreement reached during E3+3 and Iran talks, chaired by Catherine Ashton, is another example of well-coordinated and synergetic efforts of mediation. Welcome the High Representative with the achievements and hope that further efforts to reach a comprehensive solution on the Iranian nuclear issue will lead to greater stability and security in all region. Mr. Secretary General, Madam High Representative, as we all know, human rights violations are often the first signal of a bigger crisis to come. We can expect to break the cycle of repeating crises and conflicts only by ensuring full respect for human rights, justice, accountability, good governance, rule of law in particular. Lithuania stresses the importance of the UN partnership on strengthening the rule of law, as the rule of law has a tremendous potential in facilitating post-conflict peace building, peace preventing, preventing armed conflicts, and helping progress towards sustainable peace and development. Welcome the rights upfront initiative by Secretary General. Lithuania looks forward to the continuous work of the United Nations and EU as natural partners in seeking to ensure human dignity, safe and secure life for all. We are convinced that EU voice should continue to be well heard at the United Nations, and the core United Nations objectives should endure in the center of EU foreign policy endeavors. Let me assure you, Mr. Secretary General and Madam High Representative, of Lithuania's continued support to the ever-expanding cooperation based on shared values between United Nations and UN, between European Union and UN, and promoting international peace and security. So thank you. Now let me resume my functions as a president of the Council. And now I'd like to give the floor to other members of the Security Council. I give the floor to the representative of Argentina.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Buenos días. Deseo darle la bienvenida, señor canciller de Lituania, felicitarlo por ser miembro no permanente del Consejo de Seguridad y resaltar el liderazgo de su misión aquí en Naciones Unidas, encabezada por la distinguida embajadora Raimonda Murmokaitė. Celebro la iniciativa de Lituania de realizar este debate abierto y en este marco agradezco las reflexiones y desafíos que compartiera con nosotros el secretario general de Naciones Unidas en su informe. También valoramos positivamente el informe de la alta representante de la Unión Europea, baronesa Catherine Ashton. Este debate nos permite reflexionar sobre las distintas dimensiones de la articulación entre las organizaciones regionales y subregionales y las Naciones Unidas en el mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Se trata de un tema al que mi país le otorga gran importancia. Durante nuestra presidencia del Consejo de Seguridad en agosto de 2013, organizamos un debate abierto que fuera encabezado por la presidenta Fernández de Kirchner. En este Consejo, el diálogo con la Unión Europea es importante y frecuente. La Unión Europea estuvo presente en el debate abierto de agosto, en octubre bajo la presidencia de Azerbaiyán sobre el fortalecimiento de las sinergias entre las Naciones Unidas y la Organización de Cooperación Islámica, y hoy en este debate. Ello marca una tendencia que esperamos se afirme y se extienda a otras organizaciones regionales y subregionales en el entendimiento que son estas las que pueden expresar una comprensión más integral y efectiva de las distintas realidades. La cooperación entre las Naciones Unidas y las organizaciones y los acuerdos regionales y subregionales en los asuntos relativos al mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad forma parte integral de la seguridad colectiva prevista en la Carta de las Naciones Unidas. El papel desempeñado por las organizaciones regionales y subregionales en la prevención y solución de conflictos ha crecido en importancia y se ha extendido a una amplia gama de situaciones desde 1945. Su contribución complementa la labor de Naciones Unidas e incorpora el conocimiento de la propia región que poseen las organizaciones regionales y subregionales, así como sobre las causas de los conflictos, ventajas comparativas irreemplazables que resultan de gran valor en los esfuerzos de prevención y solución de conflictos, mantenimiento y consolidación de la paz, incluidos el mantenimiento del orden constitucional, la promoción y protección de los derechos humanos, la democracia, el Estado de Derecho y la lucha contra la impunidad. Las Naciones Unidas, por su parte, suman su composición universal y legitimidad, su gran experiencia y su capacidad operacional en el ámbito de la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Cabe destacar la contribución al mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad internacionales en consonancia con las decisiones del capítulo octavo de las Naciones Unidas, de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales, con el despliegue de operaciones de mantenimiento de la paz autorizadas por este Consejo. Las organizaciones regionales y subregionales pueden desempeñar un importante papel en la prevención, resolución, en las acciones de mediación, en los procesos de consolidación de la paz, recuperación, reconstrucción y desarrollo después de los conflictos. En este sentido, Argentina considera fundamental trabajar desde las organizaciones regionales y subregionales junto a Naciones Unidas en la iniciativa Rights Up Front, que tiende a la protección y promoción de los derechos humanos y desarrollar mecanismos de acción temprana como estrategia preventiva para impedir que situaciones de inestabilidad se conviertan en graves conflictos o atrocidades masivas. Señor presidente, la colaboración entre Naciones Unidas y la Unión Europea se caracteriza por su amplitud, tanto en términos geográficos como de contenido. La Argentina aprecia la contribución de la Unión Europea en apoyo al mantenimiento de la paz y seguridad internacionales en su propia región, así como fuera del ámbito europeo, en particular, aunque no exclusivamente en África, donde varios países pertenecientes a la Unión Europea han tenido presencia y tienen una responsabilidad histórica. Esa contribución se ha visto fortalecida en los últimos años por su cooperación con las Naciones Unidas en búsqueda de soluciones a los conflictos en Medio Oriente, Somalia, Mali, el Sahel y los Balcanes, entre otros. Cabe destacar en particular su rol en negociaciones internacionales y mediación, su compromiso con el mantenimiento y la consolidación de la paz, así como la asistencia humanitaria y apoyo logístico brindado en diversos escenarios. En el contexto de una negociación asimétrica, como la que caracteriza a la que llevan adelante Israel y Palestina, el apoyo de la comunidad internacional a quienes promueven la paz en base a una solución justa y duradera se convierte en un elemento crítico. Consideramos, por ello, que la Unión Europea, a través de su participación en el cuarteto, también desde allí ha desempeñado un importante papel en apoyo de las conversaciones actualmente en curso, reafirmando en todo momento los principios y parámetros de la solución de dos estados compartida por la abrumadora mayoría de la comunidad internacional. En este sentido, pensamos que directrices de la Comisión Europea aprobadas el pasado mes de julio, estableciendo que solo proporcionaría subvenciones a las instituciones israelíes dentro de las fronteras de 1967, o el reciente ofrecimiento de un paquete de ayuda económica, política y de seguridad en el contexto de un acuerdo entre las partes, son ejemplos concretos que pueden ofrecer la comunidad internacional y reafirman el compromiso del bloque con la solución de dos estados. En relación con Siria, reconocemos la contribución financiera de la Unión Europea para paliar la catastrófica crisis humanitaria que atraviesa el país, la asistencia a los países vecinos y su apoyo a la misión conjunta de la OPAC y las Naciones Unidas. Valoramos también la continua reafirmación de la Unión a la solución política de la crisis en base a la implementación del Comunicado de Ginebra de junio de 2012. Sin embargo, no podemos dejar de lamentar que el bloque haya levantado el embargo que impedía a sus miembros exportar armas a Siria, abriendo la puerta a una mayor militarización del conflicto, a pesar de haber expresado en varias ocasiones su preocupación por el creciente flujo de armas al país. Asimismo, en cuanto al uso de sanciones, queremos reiterar nuestra convicción de que el carácter universal de las Naciones Unidas hace que la organización sea el espacio más adecuado para establecer y observar dichas medidas. Señor presidente, la Argentina alienta a las organizaciones regionales y subregionales, incluida la Unión Europea, a profundizar sus esfuerzos y fortalecer sus capacidades en materia de prevención de conflictos, así como en lo que hace a gestión de crisis y estabilización postconflicto. Reviste gran importancia la interacción y cooperación entre la Comisión de Consolidación de la Paz y las organizaciones y los acuerdos regionales y subregionales. Alentamos a la Comisión a que siga trabajando en estrecha consulta con las organizaciones y los acuerdos regionales y subregionales con miras a asegurar estrategias más coherentes e integradas para la consolidación de la paz y la recuperación en situaciones de posconflicto. Señor presidente, resulta necesario que todos los órganos y organismos de Naciones Unidas adopten estrategias preventivas y tomen medidas en sus respectivas esferas de competencia para ayudar a los Estados miembros y a las organizaciones regionales y subregionales a erradicar la pobreza, reforzar la cooperación y la asistencia para el desarrollo, promover el respeto de los derechos humanos y las libertades fundamentales. Por último, señor presidente, la justicia y el Estado de Derecho son decisivos para promover y mantener la paz, la estabilidad y el desarrollo. A este respecto, resulta esencial poner fin a la impunidad en el marco de las actividades de las sociedades en situaciones de conflicto y posconflicto, con el propósito de aceptar la realidad de graves violaciones al derecho internacional de los derechos humanos y al derecho internacional humanitario y prevenir que en el futuro se cometan graves crímenes. Estamos convencidos que las organizaciones y los acuerdos regionales y subregionales pueden contribuir a lograr la rendición de cuentas, apoyando el fortalecimiento de la capacidad de los sistemas nacionales de justicia, cooperando con los mecanismos regionales y con los tribunales internacionales, incluida la Corte Penal Internacional. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, representative of Argentina, and give floor to representative of Australia, please.
excuse me. Mr. President, I warmly welcome your own presence in the Council today to preside over this debate. And, of course, I thank both the Secretary-General and the High Representative for their statements. A reading of the history of the negotiation of the United Nations Charter reveals that the framing of Chapter 8 on regional arrangements was a particularly contentious debate. Excuse me again. While the Charter clearly needed to confer primacy for the maintenance of international peace and security on the universal institution it was creating, a clear recognition of the contribution that regional organisations could make to collective security was required, and the relationship between the UN and regional organisations needed to be defined. Discussions on those issues at Dumbarton Oaks and San Francisco were particularly intense, and Chapter 8 was the result. Drafted decades before the emergence of transformative regional organisations, such as the EU and the AU, Chapter 8 has proven to be prescient and utilitarian. As this Council recognised in its PRST last August, cooperation between the UN and regional and sub-regional organisations is now an integral part of collective security as provided for in the Charter. The European Union is self-evidently a natural and crucial partner for the UN. It is actively engaged within its region and beyond in conflict prevention, peacemaking, peacekeeping, as well as combating proliferation and terrorism, all key objectives of our collective endeavours. All, of course, also underwritten by the fact that the EU and its 28 member states together provide the single largest financial contribution to the UN system. This EU engagement contributes directly and fundamentally to our collective efforts on peacekeeping, peacebuilding, and conflict prevention. Since the Council was last briefed by High Representative Ashton in January last year, significant security challenges have emerged or persisted in a number of countries in Africa, and the EU has significantly assisted both the UN and the AU's efforts to address these. EU provision of capacity building in Mali and Somalia and its direct support for the AU peacekeeping mission in Somalia is playing an instrumental role towards building stability and sustainable peace in those countries. As the Secretary-General has said this morning, the situation in the Central African Republic is of grave concern. Strong support for the African-led International Support Mission, MISCA, is essential, and Australia therefore welcomes the EU's support for MISCA and the establishment by the EU of its military mission in the Central African Republic. We welcome the strong commitment articulated this morning on continuing support. Australia commends High Representative Ashton for brokering the historic agreement in April last year between Serbia and Kosovo, and for her continued intense support for the high-level dialogue between the parties to achieve full normalisation of relations. On Iran, the EU's efforts have been pivotal in facilitating the interim agreement with the P5+1. The agreement provides a path towards a long-term comprehensive solution. In the meantime, as chair of the Security Council's Iran Sanctions Committee, Australia is working to ensure the effectiveness of existing Security Council sanctions measures. On Syria, Australia and the EU share the view that the international community must support efforts led by the Joint Special Representative, Brahimi, to build a credible political framework to end the conflict. We welcome the support of EU member states in the rapid establishment of the joint UN-OPCW mission in Syria and their efforts to promote unhindered access for humanitarian assistance to affected people in Syria and neighbouring countries, as well, of course, as their significant contributions to the UN's humanitarian and refugee appeals for Syria. We look forward to their support for an urgent Security Council resolution on the humanitarian crisis in Syria. On the Middle East peace process, we commend High Representative Ashton for her contribution as a principal member of the Middle East Quartet. We welcome the EU's December announcement of an unprecedented package of security, political and economic support to Israel and the Palestinians in the context of a final status agreement. On Ukraine, we welcome the EU's constructive response to the ongoing protests and calls for dialogue between the parties. We acknowledge the important role High Representative Ashton herself has played, including through her multiple recent visits to Ukraine. And we encourage, of course, the EU to continue to promote a peaceful and democratic resolution to that crisis. To conclude, Mr. President, given the number and complexity of conflicts around the world, continued close cooperation between the UN and regional organisations obviously remains crucial, and the EU-UN relationship shows just how there is a continued relevance, utility and, importantly, adaptability of Chapter 8 under the Charter. Finally, I would like to thank the High Representative for her own personal dedication during her time in office towards efforts to enhance peace and security. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Representative of Australia, and give floor to Representative of Nigeria.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. On behalf of my delegation, I wish to thank your esteemed country for organizing this briefing and to warmly welcome you, Foreign Minister, to chair this meeting. I also thank your permanent representative here for the leadership she has given during this presidency of the Security Council by your delegation. Both our missions are led by women of considerable ability, and perhaps that lends itself to the close affinity and cooperation that we enjoy. I should like to thank Her Excellency, the High Representative of the European Union, Baroness Catherine Ashton, for her briefing today, and also to inform you, Madam, of the very close cooperation that we have with the EU delegation here in New York on all matters in the General Assembly and here in the Security Council. I also wish to personally, on behalf of my delegation, note and thank you for the EU budget adopted last year for the EU-SCP initiative amounting to about $30.5 billion, which your delegation kindly informed us about. So we thank you for that, Madam. We wish to also thank His Excellency the Secretary General, with whom we enjoy very close, almost daily contact and relationship, for his leadership in consolidating and engaging the relationship between the United Nations and regional organizations, particularly his commitment to NEPAD and the AU Peace and Security Initiatives. Having said so, Mr. President, Chapter 8 of the UN Charter was visionary as it laid the foundation for the United Nations and regional organizations to work together to prevent, manage, and resolve crises. Indeed, many regional and sub-regional organizations have developed strategies to effectively engage in conflict prevention and mediation, peacekeeping as well as peacebuilding, drawing on lessons learned from the efforts of the UN in these areas. Cooperation between the UN and regional and sub-regional organizations in the maintenance of international peace and security is a growing trend and a win-win partnership. It has been demonstrated time and again that regional and sub-regional organizations can contribute their usually proximate understanding of local and regional conflicts and their root causes, as well as their capacity to respond. The long-standing cooperation between the EU and the UN now covers the entire spectrum of response to international crises, from immediate crisis reaction, humanitarian action, peacekeeping and peacebuilding, to development even beyond the European continent. It must also be acknowledged that the EU is a committed partner that provides substantial support in capacity building in regional organizations. We note the significant contributions of the EU to economic development and stabilization of the Western Balkans region in order to further promote democracy, economic prosperity, stability, and regional cooperation. We encourage the parties to deepen their constructive engagement. The EU remains an important partner As the African Union continues to develop the African peace and security architecture, in Somalia, for instance, EU initiatives such as Operation Atalanta and EU-CAP, NESTO, have contributed significantly to improving security in the Horn of Africa. We acknowledge the ongoing efforts of the EU in attempting to stabilize conflict situations in Mali and the Central African Republic. The provision of technical assistance, expertise, and capacity building to MINUSMA is a clear demonstration of the EU's commitment to security and development, not only of Mali, but of the broader Sahel region. The decision of the EU to establish a temporary operation to support MISCA in Central African Republic in order to protect the civilian population and aid the provision of humanitarian assistance is yet more evidence of the way in which regional organizations can cooperate with each other in the interest of peace and security. The credentials of the EU also reflect the values, purposes, and principles enshrined in the UN Charter. Its support to the promotion of security, development, good governance, and human rights across the world is well documented. The EU has also been strident in supporting concerted international action in the protection of civilians in situations of armed conflict. This and other humanitarian endeavors, including its support for enhancing the role of women in conflict resolution, demonstrate the capacity of the EU for cooperation on a global scale. I should also seize this opportunity to underline the importance of the cooperation that exists between the UN and the African Union. In 2006, the AU and UN reached agreement on a 10-year capacity building program for the AU, which provides the main framework for UN assistance to the AU. Under the program, the UN has supported the AU in areas such as capacity building for mediation, electoral assistance, and technical assistance to the AU Peace and Security Council. The UN and AU have also worked for the maintenance of peace and security through collaboration in peacekeeping operations on the African continent. The UN Security Council and the AU Peace and Security Council have, through their annual consultations, held discussions on issues of common interest, especially conflict situations in Africa. These consultations are mutually beneficial as they allow for close coordination of the actions of the AU and UN in matters of peace and security. We believe that the process could benefit from strengthening of policy-level coordination between the two organizations. We would like to reiterate our strong support for the engagement between the UN and regional and sub-regional organizations in line with Chapter 8 of the UN Charter. We see the EU as a good example of how this engagement can work for the maintenance of international peace and security. As reflected in the PRST just adopted, we would like to see this engagement strengthened. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. To representative of Nigeria, and I'd like to give the floor to representative of Jordan.
أشكركم معالي الرئيس على عقد هذه الجلسة الهامة وأرحب بكم أحر الترحيب كما أرحب بالممثل السامي للاتحاد الأوروبي المعني بالشؤون الخارجية والسياسة الأمنية البارونس كاثرين أشتون وأتقدم بالشكر لها وللأمين العام معالي السيد بان كي مون على إحاطتهما. يرحب الأردن بتطور علاقة التعاون والشراكة بين الأمم المتحدة والاتحاد الأوروبي الذي يحظى باحترام دولي متين لدوره المتزن في مختلف القضايا الدولية ولما يمثله من نموذج يحتذى به في مجالات التقدم الإقليمي وتحقيق السلام. يرى الأردن أن التعاون بين الأمم المتحدة والاتحاد الأوروبي في المسائل المتعلقة بصون السلام والأمن الدوليين وبما يتفق مع الفصل الثامن من ميثاق الأمم المتحدة سيساهم بشكل كبير في تحسين الأمن الجماعي. فالاتحاد الأوروبي يتمتع بإمكانات اقتصادية وأمنية وسياسية مثمرة تساعده على لعب دور فعال وضمن الجهود الدولية الهادفة لمنع النزاعات وتسويتها. وأود هنا أن أتناول بعض جوانب التعاون التكاملي بين الأمم المتحدة والاتحاد الأوروبي. أولا، إن الاتحاد الأوروبي شريك حقيقي وفعال في الجهود الرامية لتحقيق السلام الدائم والعادل والشامل في الشرق الأوسط استنادا إلى حل الدولتين، والأردن ملتزم بإدامة وتعزيز التنسيق والعمل المشترك مع الاتحاد الأوروبي لإحلال السلام في منطقتنا. ويتفق الأردن مع الاتحاد الأوروبي على ضرورة دعم الجهود التي يبذلها وزير الخارجية الأمريكي في دفع المفاوضات المباشرة بين الطرفين الفلسطيني والإسرائيلي. ونشيد هنا بإعلان الاتحاد الأوروبي عن حوافز غير مسبوقة للطرفين في حال تم التوصل إلى اتفاق بينهما، وإلى استمرار دعم الاتحاد الأوروبي للسلطة الوطنية الفلسطينية، وكذلك الدور المميز الذي يقوم به الاتحاد في اللجنة الرباعية الدولية جنبا إلى جنب مع الأمم المتحدة والاتحاد الروسي والولايات المتحدة الأمريكية. كما يقدر الأردن الاستجابة السريعة والفعالة للاتحاد الأوروبي في تلبية النداءات الدولية للتعامل مع الأزمة الإنسانية في سوريا وتبعاتها على دول الجوار التي ما زالت تستقبل أعداداً متزايدة من اللاجئين السوريين. ويثمن الأردن مختلف أنواع الدعم الذي يقدمه الاتحاد الأوروبي للشعب السوري وللدول المجاورة لسوريا لتجاوز هذه المعاناة. يدعم الأردن الدور الفعال للاتحاد الأوروبي في تنسيق الجهود الدبلوماسية الهادفة لإيجاد حل سلمي وتفاوضي وشامل للملف النووي الإيراني يلبي شواغل المجتمع الدولي. ويرحب الأردن بالاتفاق الذي تم التوصل إليه بين الدول الأوروبية الثلاثة زائد ثلاثة وإيران حول خطة العمل المشتركة، ونراها كخطوة في الاتجاه الصحيح. ثانياً، يرى الأردن أن الاتحاد الأوروبي دوراً محورياً في تحقيق الاستقرار والتنمية الاقتصادية في منطقة غرب البلقان. ونشيد تحديداً باستمرار الجهود الشخصية والمتواصلة للسيدة كاثرين أشتون في دفع الحوار بين جمهوريتي صربيا وكوسوفو في إطار الاتفاق التاريخي الأول على المبادئ المنظمة لتطبيع العلاقات بينهما. إن هذه الطاقة الأوروبية لن تساعد فقط على تجاوز تحديات المرحلة المقبلة بين الطرفين، بل وستساهم في نشر ثقافة الحوار والتعاون في المنطقة بأسرها. ثالثاً، يرحب الأردن بالتزام الاتحاد الأوروبي بالمساهمة في تحقيق السلام والأمن والتنمية في القارة الإفريقية من خلال الاطلاع بدور محوري في الجهود الدولية لمواجهة التهديدات المتجددة للقرصنة البحرية. ونشيد أيضا بمساهمة الاتحاد الأوروبي في تدريب قوات الأمن الصومالية بالتعاون مع بعثة الاتحاد الأفريقي للصومال أميسون. ونثمن الجهود المبذولة من قبل الاتحاد الأوروبي في دعم بعثة الأمم المتحدة في مالي وبمساهمته في دعم نشر بعثة الدعم الدولية التي يقودها الأفارقة في جمهورية أفريقيا الوسطى ميسكا. وندعو بهذا الصدد إلى توفير كافة الوسائل الكفيلة بإعادة الاستقرار إليها عبر رفع جاهزية تلك البعثات. رابعاً، لا بد لنا عند تناول المسائل المتعلقة بصون السلام والأمن الدوليين والتي تقع في صلب مسؤوليات مجلس الأمن بموجب الميثاق، أن نشير إلى أن عمليات حفظ السلام هي واحدة من أكثر الأدوات ذات الفعالية والمتاحة أمام الأمم المتحدة لمساعدة الدول على إجازة طريق صعب من الصراع إلى السلام. وإننا نرى كأحد الدول الرئيسية المساهمة بالقوات أن هناك مسؤولية دولية مشتركة في دعم عمليات حفظ السلام التابعة للأمم المتحدة في ظل الطلب المستمر عليها وتوسيعها وزيادة احتياجاتها، وإذ نقرر الدعم الذي تقدمه دول الاتحاد الأوروبي إلى موازنة حفظ السلام، إلا أننا نأمل بأن تقوم دول الاتحاد التي لديها قدرات في مجال حفظ السلام أن تعزز مشاركتها بعناصر الجيش والشرطة في العمليات التابعة للأمم المتحدة. ختاماً، يسعدنا أن يتبنى مجلس الأمن البيان الرئاسي لجلستنا اليوم، وشكراً سيد الرئيس.
Thank you very much, Representative of Jordan. And now I'll give the floor to Representative of Rwanda.
Yeah, Your Excellency Linas Linkevičius, Minister of Foreign Affairs of Lithuania and President of the Security Council. Allow me first to commend you and your delegation for the initiative to hold this debate. I will also thank the UN Secretary General, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, as well as the High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Baroness Catherine Ashton, for their respective statements. As previously stated in this Council, debate of this nature present opportunities to reflect on ways of reinforcing cooperation in areas of common interest between the United Nations and regional and sub-regional organizations, and how to strengthen cooperation in maintaining international peace and security as provided by the Chapter 8 of the UN Charter. Mr. President, the UN-EU cooperation is one of the most advanced cooperation schemes between the UN and other regional organizations, and it covers the whole spectrum of maintenance of peace and stability, including conflict prevention, mediation, crisis management, peace building, development, humanitarian relief, promotion of the rule of law, and assistance and political cooperation. There is no doubt that the EU has become an important institution that promotes peace, security, and stability in all its aspects around the world, particularly in Africa. We value the partnership between the European Union and the African Union in various fields, including logistical support and capacity building, and we believe that the annual meetings between the AU Peace and Security and the EU Peace and Security Committee are important tools to support AU efforts in peace and security. In Somalia, the EU is playing a very important role in supporting the African mission to Somalia, AMISOM, in stabilizing that country and in fighting the piracy of the coast of Somalia. We particularly commend the EU for organizing the donor conference for Somalia in Brussels last year, and we believe that the pledges made in this conference will help Somalia in strengthening its institution. In Central African Republic, Rwanda welcomes the continued commitment of the EU to protect civilians, as demonstrated by its decision to deploy up to 1,000 troops in that country to assist the African-led international support mission in Central African Republic, MISCA, which includes troops from Rwanda, as well as the 400 additional troops sent by France in the Operation Sangaris in ongoing efforts to stabilize the Central African Republic, torn by horrendous crimes and ethnic cleansing, mainly against the Muslim community. We also welcome the EU decision to allocate about 75 million euros as a support to MISCA. All this contribution is a clear indication of the EU understanding of burden sharing between the UN and regional organizations in the maintenance of peace and stability. Rwanda also acknowledged the EU involvement in building state institutions in Mali, where about four battalions of the Malian armed forces have already received training through the EU training mission in Mali. This training will certainly help the Malian army to sustain peace and stability, and we look forward to for further support by the European Union in this regard. Outside the continent, we commend the European Union for its important contribution in promoting the rule of law in Kosovo through the EU Rule and Law Mission, and for its role in mediating between Serbia and Kosovo. This mediation has led to the signing of the historical agreement of 19th April 2013 on the normalization of relations between Serbia and Kosovo. We also acknowledge the critical role played by the EU, including through the EU plus three, E3 plus 3, P5 plus 1, in the breakthrough in the negotiations on the Iranian nuclear program, as well as its role in the Middle East process, the destruction of the Syrian chemical weapons, and its valuable contribution to the humanitarian relief in Syria. Mr. President, despite those significant developments, like most of other regional organizations, cooperation between the United Nations and the EU has yet to reach its full potential. Increasingly, EU missions are deployed where the UN is already engaged, but both organizations are also more than often deploying in the same countries, but not necessarily coordinating with each other, which in some situations creates a series of parallel or co-located missions where cooperation between the two organizations is minimal or even non-existent. We can here give the examples of Afghanistan, EU-POL and UNAMA, in DRC, EU-SEC, EU-POL and MONUSCO, and Somalia, EU-NAVFOR and UNPOS. We believe that enhancing cooperation between the two organizations, as stressed by the presidential statement that was just adopted, will increase efficiency and avoid duplication of efforts. It is only through enhanced cooperation with other actors, both at the headquarters and on the ground, that it will have greater potential to achieve success in maintenance of peace and security in the region. Mr. President, I cannot conclude my statement without expressing my country's appreciation of the European Union's role in assisting many countries in addressing the root causes of conflicts in post-conflict reconstruction, including its support to poverty alleviation, capacity building and education, promotion of the rule of law and good governance. We believe, however, that mutual accountability and respect will contribute to the effectiveness of development assistance and contribute to stability and development of recipient states and entities. To conclude, Mr. President, as this is the last briefing of the EU High Representative of the Security of the EU to the Security Council in her current capacity, Rwanda appreciates the personal role she played in promoting the EU-UN cooperation, as well as contributing to peace and security in various parts of the world, particularly on the African continent. I thank you.
Thank you very much for the representative of Rwanda, and I will give the floor to representative of Chile, please.
Gracias, señor presidente. Saludamos y felicitamos a usted, señor presidente, y a su delegación por haber convocado a esta reunión. Agradecemos al secretario general Ban Ki-moon y a la alta representante de la Unión Europea para Asuntos Exteriores y de Política de Seguridad, señora Catherine Ashton, por las presentaciones realizadas. Señor presidente, como lo hemos señalado en intervenciones previas en este Consejo, para Chile la acción colectiva resulta imperativa para hacer frente a las amenazas que afectan la paz y la seguridad internacionales, y ella se ve reforzada por el involucramiento de los organismos regionales y subregionales. Ese es el sentido con que mi país interpreta el artículo 8 de la Carta de Naciones Unidas. Ello nos lleva a promover un multilateralismo eficiente, dotado de una capacidad efectiva de incorporar la contribución de los organismos regionales y subregionales para enfrentar las crisis o los conflictos que puedan afectar la paz y la seguridad internacionales. La declaración del presidente que acabamos de adoptar representa una interpretación y aplicación adecuadas de las potencialidades que ofrecen las disposiciones de dicho capítulo, en el cual se enmarca la alianza estratégica de Naciones Unidas con la Unión Europea. Es por eso que damos la bienvenida al fortalecimiento del trabajo que Naciones Unidas ha venido realizando con la Unión Europea en beneficio de la paz y la seguridad internacionales. Señor Presidente, el documento adoptado da cuenta del rol creciente y específico que la Unión Europea como actor relevante del sistema internacional, especialmente en lo que respecta a su contribución al mantenimiento de la paz y seguridad internacionales. Resulta particularmente importante el trabajo que dicha organización realiza en apoyo de otros organismos regionales y subregionales, interacción que consideramos positiva y que debe continuar manteniéndose de manera colaborativa y coordinada en cada caso. Como país, hemos podido comprobar lo anterior al participar activamente con tropas chilenas en la misión Altea en Bosnia y Herzegovina desde hace 10 años. La reciente firma del Acuerdo Marco de Gestión de Crisis, que proporciona una base legal para la participación de Chile en las operaciones civiles y militares de gestiones de crisis lideradas por la Unión Europea, permitirá profundizar esa cooperación, constituyendo un ejemplo concreto de la excelente relación y sintonía en diversas áreas, la madurez de nuestros vínculos y los valores compartidos. Señor Presidente, para Chile resulta importante haber apoyado esta declaración, puesto que ella da cuenta de valores y principios consagrados en la Carta de Naciones Unidas que compartimos. Asimismo, destacan aquellos temas transversales de interés para Naciones Unidas, apoyados por la Unión Europea y que coinciden con aspectos de la política exterior de Chile. Cooperación para el desarrollo, promoción y protección de los derechos humanos y libertades fundamentales, protección de civiles, participación de las mujeres en la prevención y solución de los conflictos, la consolidación de la paz y el mantenimiento de la paz. Compartimos también perspectivas sobre la relevancia del Estado de Derecho en la promoción y mantención de la paz, estabilidad y desarrollo, incluyendo la cooperación con mecanismos de justicia internacional, incluyendo la Corte Penal Internacional. Señor Presidente, en la declaración del Presidente del Consejo de Seguridad del 6 de agosto del año 2013, este órgano reconoció que las organizaciones regionales y subregionales están en buenas condiciones de comprender las causas de los conflictos armados, dado su conocimiento de la región, lo cual puede ayudar en los esfuerzos que realiza para influir en la prevención y solución de esos conflictos. Coincidimos plenamente con dicho predicamento y consideramos que este reafirma la labor de complementariedad de las organizaciones regionales y subregionales con las labores realizadas por Naciones Unidas en materia de la paz y seguridad internacional. Concluyo agradeciendo a la señora Ashton su compromiso personal en la solución y prevención de los conflictos, en la consolidación de la paz y en el mantenimiento de la paz. Muchas gracias.
I thank representative of Chile and also would like to give the floor to the representative of United States.
Thank you, Mr. President, and congratulations on Lithuania's presidency of the Security Council. Thank you also, Mr. Secretary General, for your remarks this morning, particularly the forceful comments you made on the Central African Republic. The United States welcomes High Representative Catherine Ashton back to the Council and thanks her for elaborating on the EU's important relationship with the United Nations. Please allow me to say that we appreciate your personal contributions And we look forward to working with you, High Representative Ashton, through the end of your term. And we, of course, wish you well in your future endeavors. But we hope and expect to achieve a great deal more together on behalf of international peace and security between now and the end of the year. The Security Council's resolutions and statements on cooperation with regional and sub-regional organizations emphasize the importance of developing effective partnerships, and in that context, we fully support the adoption of today's presidential statement. We share the EU's conviction that in response to global challenges, the international community requires an effective and efficient multilateral system, and we appreciate the EU's own focus on effective multilateralism as a key element of its external action. The EU is an indispensable partner to the United Nations and, of course, to the United States as well. Allow me to highlight several areas in particular where the EU is making an important contribution internationally to peace, security, and respect for human rights. The European External Action Service is a young organization, but it is already having a tremendous impact in its own neighborhood. My government appreciates the EU's role in promoting European stability, in particular, High Representative Ashton's ongoing leadership of the EU-facilitated dialogue between Kosovo and Serbia that led to the landmark agreement in April of last year on normalizing relations. I have had some experience in the region and would have placed myself among the skeptics in the run-up to the dialogue. But the High Representative's tireless efforts, we heard today 226 hours of meetings, and the courageous leadership of Prime Ministers Thaçi and Dačić have shown that by sitting face-to-face, hashing out differences, and focusing on the future, one-time rivals can achieve historic change. They deserve our praise and our support in ensuring the full implementation of their pact. Much hard work, obviously, lies ahead. The EU's contribution to the goals of the United Nations extend well beyond Europe. From its role as a member in the Quartet on Middle East Peace to its engagement on Iran, the EU is working closely with its partners to foster stability and security. And here we welcome the EU's December announcement that it will provide an unprecedented package of political, economic, and security support to both the Israelis and the Palestinians in the context of a final status agreement. The EU role is especially welcome in Africa, where this council focuses a great deal of attention. My government commends the EU for its joint Africa-EU strategy, which is striving to advance cooperation on a range of issues, including peace, security, democratic governance, and the Millennium Development Goals. We also applaud the EU's commitment to enhancing the AU's capacity through the African Peace Facility to address conflict on the continent. The Council saw the EU's real-world impact during our recent visit to Mali. We had the privilege of engaging with the commander of the EU training mission to Mali, Brigadier General Bruno Goubert, to discuss the EU's effort to rebuild the Malian army, which is critical to lasting stability in the country. I was impressed by the hard work of the 550 dedicated military personnel from 23 European countries who are helping the Malian armed forces to reestablish their ability to secure the entirety of Mali and to implement needed and crucial reforms that prioritize, among other things, the Malian military's adherence to human rights and international law. As is well known, the EU is actively engaged in supporting the stabilization of the Central African Republic, providing approximately 200 million euro in humanitarian and security assistance to help the people of the Central African Republic. We welcome the EU's recent announcement of an additional 25 million euro to assist the AU-led mission and also its agreement to provide up to 500 troops in support of that vital operation. We are hopeful that these troops can be mobilized and deployed very swiftly. In December, when I visited Car, I was deeply saddened and struck by the terrible violence which has spread along religious lines and is fueled by an almost total absence of either security or accountability. We need urgently to step up our support for the efforts of Christian and Muslim leaders who are seeking to end the killing and restore a basis for national unity. I applaud the EU for its leadership at this critical time and look forward to a continual dialogue with the EU, the African Union, and all the members of this council regarding next steps. We agree strongly with the Secretary General that the situation could not be more urgent. My government also shares the EU's concerns over the crises in South Sudan and in the broader Sahel. We endorse the EU's efforts to promote peaceful solutions in the Sahel region, including its recent pledge of 142 million euro in humanitarian aid this year to meet the urgent needs of civilians. The EU is also engaged on a variety of cross-border issues, including combating the scourge of piracy. Accordingly, we welcome the EU's chairmanship of the Contact Group on Piracy off the coast of Somalia, established pursuant to the UN Security Council Resolution 1851. We share the EU's commitment to bring the number of piracy attacks and hostage takings down to zero. And we note the EU's focus on prevention and regional maritime capacity building, its increased engagement with industry, and its efforts to trace financial flows resulting from piracy. Finally, we welcome the EU's commitment, as expressed in the Foreign Affairs Council conclusions issued on Monday, to remain a vocal advocate for human rights at the UN. The United States shares this dedication to promote and protect fundamental freedoms, whether it is working to oppose the global crackdown on civil society that is currently underway, to eliminate gender-based violence, to speak out on behalf of the human rights of LGBT persons, or fighting attempts to restrict freedom of expression. The United States stands with the EU in upholding the values enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of the United States, and now I'd like to give the floor to the representative of Chad.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Monsieur le Président, permettez-moi de vous souhaiter la bienvenue et vous féliciter pour votre présidence. Je remercie également votre présidence pour l'organisation de la séance de ce matin sur un thème aussi important comme celui de la coopération entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales et sous-régionales, en particulier avec l'Union européenne, dans le maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Je remercie le secrétaire général et baronne Catherine Ashton, la haute représentante de l'Union européenne, pour leurs interventions. Je tiens à saluer le leadership, l'engagement constant et l'immense contribution de l'Union européenne dans la promotion de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Monsieur le Président, face à la gravité et à la multiplicité de conflits et crises que traverse le monde, la coopération entre les Nations Unies, les organisations régionales et sous-régionales est une question d'importance capitale. Cette coopération prend un relief particulier quand elle implique un acteur régional majeur comme l'Union européenne, compte tenu de son poids, de ses atouts et de son rôle de plus en plus croissant dans la gestion des crises. Monsieur le Président, le Tchad reconnaît le premier rôle que confère la Charte des Nations Unies au Conseil de sécurité pour le maintien de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. Dans le même temps, il tient à souligner la contribution non négligeable qu'apportent les organisations régionales et sous-régionales à l'ONU en la matière. À cet égard, le transfert d'autorité de la mission internationale de soutien au Mali sous conduite africaine, MISMA, à la mission multidimensionnelle intégrée des Nations Unies pour la stabilisation du Mali, MINUSMA, est un exemple de coopération efficace entre l'Union africaine, la Communauté économique des États de l'Afrique de l'Ouest et les Nations Unies. De même, l'étroite collaboration entre les Nations Unies, l'Union africaine et la Communauté économique des États de l'Afrique centrale dans le règlement de la crise en République centrafricaine par le déploiement de la mission internationale de soutien à la Centrafrique sous conduite africaine MISCA peut également être cité comme un élément de complémentarité et de synergie dans la gestion des crises. Le déploiement d'un contingent de 500 soldats de l'Union européenne en RCA, autorisé par le Conseil de sécurité, vient renforcer davantage ce partenariat et traduit l'élan de solidarité de la communauté internationale. L'ONU et les organisations régionales et sous-régionales doivent resserrer davantage leur coopération dans le domaine de l'alerte précoce en cas de crise, de la prévention des conflits ainsi que de l'établissement, du maintien et de la consolidation de la paix. L'action des organisations régionales et sous-régionales dans ces domaines peut bien compléter celle menée par l'ONU conformément au chapitre 8 de la Charte des Nations Unies. En outre, la proximité géographique et la connaissance des réalités locales font de ces organisations des partenaires à même de mieux comprendre les causes de conflits et d'aider à leur règlement. Monsieur le Président, la coopération entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales et sous-régionales devrait se traduire par le renforcement des capacités régionales et l'appropriation en matière de maintien de la paix afin de promouvoir une prise en charge régionale de la gestion des crises. L'appui logistique des Nations Unies à la mission africaine en Somalie et les précieux soutiens financiers et politiques de l'Union européenne à cette opération constituent un bel exemple de partenariat visant à renforcer les capacités régionales. Il convient également de souligner, pour s'en féliciter, que l'assistance multiforme de l'Union européenne à l'architecture de paix et de sécurité de l'Union africaine répond aux soucis de cette logique. Nous encourageons l'Union européenne à continuer à apporter son soutien à l'Union africaine et aux opérations de maintien de la paix des Nations Unies en général. Le renforcement des capacités régionales dans le maintien de la paix et de la sécurité devrait obéir à une approche holistique pour permettre aux organisations régionales et sous-régionales de développer des aptitudes à gérer les questions des droits de l'homme, de l'impunité, de la protection des enfants et des femmes, indissociables des opérations de maintien de la paix. Pour ce faire, elles devraient bénéficier d'un financement adéquat. Nous demandons aux Nations Unies et à l'Union européenne à apporter leur expertise et leur appui financier à l'Union africaine dans ce domaine. Pour conclure, nous disons que prévenir, gérer et résoudre efficacement les crises dans le monde nécessite une étroite et permanente coopération entre les Nations Unies et les organisations régionales et sous-régionales, une action internationale concertée reposant sur une approche pragmatique axée sur les résultats, tenant compte des avantages comparatifs des différents acteurs. L'Union européenne est un partenaire de premier plan des Nations Unies, à même d'aider à promouvoir un tel partenariat. Je vous remercie.
I thank the representative of Chad and now give the floor to representative of Russian Federation.
Благодарю вас, господин председатель. Господин министр, мы рады приветствовать вас в кресле председателя Совета Безопасности. Выступление высокого представителя Европейского Союза по иностранным делам и политике безопасности в Совете Безопасности ООН стали хорошей традицией. Признательны госпоже Эштон за ее сегодняшний брифинг. Российская Федерация последовательно выступает за развитие и совершенствование сотрудничества ООН с региональными и субрегиональными механизмами на базе устава ООН, прежде всего его главы 8. Именно на этой основе, а также в рамках принятой в мае 2011 года Генассамблеей ООН резолюции 65-276 и должно выстраиваться взаимодействие Всемирной организации с Европейским Союзом. Евросоюз объективно является одним из значимых политических и экономических игроков на международной арене и вносит вклад в укрепление многосторонности при главенствующей роли ООН, в борьбу с новыми вызовами и угрозами, в ликвидацию последствий стихийных бедствий и искоренение бедности. Отмечаем усилия Европейского Союза по мирному регулированию ситуации вокруг иранской ядерной программы. Убеждены, что совместными конструктивными усилиями мы обеспечим успешное продолжение реализации первоочередных шагов Женевских договоренностей, а выполнение совместного плана действий «шестерки Ирана» от 24 ноября 2013 года позволит снять наиболее острые озабоченности относительно характера проводимых Тегераном работ в ядерной сфере и помочь в реализации всех неотъемлемых прав Ирана как страны-участницы договора о нераспространении ядерного оружия, включая право на обогащение урана. При осуществлении операций кризисного регулирования Евросоюз и его члены должны продолжать строго руководствоваться соответствующими решениями Совета Безопасности ООН. При этом условии Россия остается открытой к налаживанию практического взаимодействия с ЕС в кризисном регулировании. по-прежнему заинтересованы в выработке равноправного соглашения о двустороннем сотрудничестве в этой области. Заключение подобного документа не только позволило бы более эффективно использовать потенциал сотрудничества России и ЕС в сфере безопасности, но и внесло бы важный вклад в наращивание коллективных возможностей по предотвращению и урегулированию кризисов. Поддерживаем призыв генсекретаря ООН к активизации международных усилий по урегулированию ситуации в Центральноафриканской Республике. В данной связи хотелось бы рассчитывать, что в Брюсселе с должным вниманием отнесутся к рекомендации о наращивании миротворческого присутствия в ЦАР, в том числе за счет ускорения развертывания в ней евромиссии. Этот вопрос напрямую затрагивает авторитет Совета Безопасности, от которого наши партнеры из ЕС столь спешно и настойчиво добивались санкций на европейскую операцию в ЦАР, еще до завершения согласительных процедур с уже развернутой там афромиссией. Не скроем, несколько удивлены поступающей информацией о том, что до сих пор нет ясности, какие именно страны предоставят миротворцев, и что большинство этих стран могут оказаться не ЕСовскими. Обеспокоены, что это может сказаться на управляемости миссии ЕС в и без того хаотичной обстановке в ЦАР. Разделяем подход Евросоюза к ближневосточному регулированию. Поддерживаем достижение приемлемых для палестинцев и израильтян договоренностей по окончательному статусу, на имеющейся международно-правовой основе, включающей резолюции Совета Безопасности, мадридские принципы, дорожную карту, арабскую мирную инициативу. Нацелена на продолжение конструктивного взаимодействия с Брюсселем в рамках Ближневосточного квартета для плотного сопровождения мирного процесса с вовлечением самих сторон конфликта и региональных игроков. Признаем работу Евросоюза по оказанию гуманитарной помощи беженцев и ВПЛ в Сирии, но ее положительный эффект во многом нивелируется односторонними санкциями, введенными Европейским Союзом в отношении этой страны. Они еще больше усугубляют и без того тяжелую гуманитарную обстановку в Сирии. Снятие этих санкций внесло бы реальный вклад в облегчение страданий сирийского народа. В целом, увлеченность односторонними санкциями, не одобренными Советом Безопасности ООН, контрпродуктивна. Признавая важность усилий Евросоюза по налаживанию диалога между Белградом и Приштиной, хотели бы подчеркнуть, что любые договоренности между сторонами должны достигаться ими самими, без давления и без подрыва роли ООН. Резолюция Совета Безопасности 1244 сохраняет силу в полном объеме, является международно-правовой основой косовского урегулирования. Именно санкции Совета Безопасности, миссии ЕС в области верховенства закона, передан ряд полномочий миссии ООН в Косово, которыми МОВС в одностороннем порядке распоряжаться не может. Ввиду того, что резолюция 1244 в полной мере сохраняет силу, данные полномочия в международном правовом плане относятся к сфере компетенции МОК и не могут быть переданы третьей стороне, тем более самопровозглашенным приштинским структурам. Аналогичного подхода придерживается и сербское руководство, о чем в этом зале не далее, как 10 февраля, заявил премьер-министр Сербии. В этой связи обеспокоены поступающими сигналами о планах реконфигурации или даже свертывания МОВС. Господин председатель, скоро госпожа Эштон затронула украинскую тему. Отметим, что мы разделяем тезис о том, что выход из кризиса должен быть найден самим украинским народом. Хотелось бы, чтобы этот тезис последовательно реализовывался на практике. Без санкционных угроз и соперничества продвигающих европейские ценности внешних игроков за то, кто именно будет расставлять министров в будущем украинском правительстве. Полагаем также, что Европейский Союз мог бы поделиться своим опытом в отношении того, как следует реагировать на уличные бесчинства. Господин председатель, в заключение хотел бы подчеркнуть, что несмотря на растущую востребованность эффективного механизма разделения труда между ООН и региональными объединениями, включая ЕС, ведущая роль Совета Безопасности в вопросах поддержания международного мира и безопасности остается незыблемой. Она закреплена в уставе ООН и ревизии не подлежит. Благодарю вас, господин председатель.
Thank you to the representative of Russian Federation, and now I'd like to give floor to representative of China. Please, you have the floor.
主席先生。 中国赞赏立陶宛倡议召开此次联合国与欧盟维护国际和平与安全合作问题的通报会。 我也欢迎林克维丘斯外长主持今天的会议。感谢联合国秘书长潘基文和欧盟外交与安全政策高级代表阿什顿女士出席今天的会议。我们认真听取了潘基文秘书长和阿什顿女士所做的通报。联合国是国际集体安全机制的核心，安理会在维护国际和平与安全方面负有首要责任。同时，各有关区域和次区域组织在维护本地区和平与安全、促进经济发展方面正发挥着日益重要的作用，与联合国形成了有益的补充。当前全球性和区域性挑战不断增多，各国安全利益紧密相连，进一步加强联合国与各区域和次区组织合作，有助于促进多边主义，巩固和加强国际集体安全机制。中国支持联合国及其安理会根据联合国宪章第八章有关规定，不断深化与欧盟等区域和次区域组织的合作。我们主张联合国同区域和次区域组织开展合作，应致力于维护联合国宪章的宗旨和原则及国际关系的基本准则，注重加强统筹协调，发挥各自优势，共同维护国际和地区的和平、安全、稳定与发展。近年来，欧盟同联合国和安理会保持协作，参与了伊朗核、中东、索马里、马里、中非共和国等地区热点问题的解决，并发挥了重要的作用。刚才潘基文秘书长提及中非共和国的局势，中非共和国人道和安全局势近来不断恶化，特别是不同宗教信徒间的暴力冲突持续上升，中方对此深表忧虑。中国希望国际社会做出更大努力，尽快采取行动，帮助中非新过渡政府制止暴力，恢复国家的正常社会秩序。中国鼓励和支持欧盟继续为维护国际及地区和平与安全发挥积极和建设性的作用。我们希望欧盟同联合国及安理会开展合作时，坚持联合国宪章确立的主权平等、和平解决争端等基本原则，致力通过斡旋、调解等手段解决有关地区热点问题，并运用自身资源和优势，注重向当事国提供发展援助，增强有关国家的自身发展能力，解决滋生冲突的根源问题。主席先生，正如中国国家主席习近平所指出的那样，作为最大的发展中国家和最大的发达国家联合体，中国和欧盟是维护世界和平的两大力量。作为世界上两个重要的经济体，中欧是促进共同发展的两大市场。作为东西方文化的重要发祥地，中欧是推动人类进步的两大文明。去年底，第16次中国欧盟领导人会晤在北京成功举行，并发表了《中欧合作2020战略规划》，为中欧未来合作指明了方向。中国愿与欧盟一道，加紧落实双方领导人的共识，不断深化中欧战略互信，加强在联合国等多边领域的合作，共同为促进世界和平、稳定与繁荣做出新的贡献。谢谢朱毅先生。
I thank the representative of China and would like to give the floor to the representative of Luxembourg, please.
Monsieur le Président,
Je remercie la Lituanie d'avoir organisé cette séance à laquelle votre présence, Monsieur le ministre, donne un relief particulier. Je remercie le secrétaire général pour son exposé et je souhaite à mon tour la bienvenue au Conseil à Mme Catherine Ashton, la haute représentante de l'Union européenne pour les affaires étrangères et la politique de sécurité. Vos exposés ont bien montré que l'Union européenne a fait ses preuves en tant que partenaire de longue date des Nations unies, au service des valeurs et des objectifs que les deux organisations ont en partage. Le respect des droits de l'homme, l'égalité des droits entre hommes et femmes, l'égalité souveraine de tous les États membres et le rejet de la guerre comme moyen de résoudre les conflits. Grâce aux instruments dont elle dispose dans les domaines de la sécurité, du maintien et de la consolidation de la paix, de l'action humanitaire et du développement, l'Union européenne est particulièrement bien placée pour aider l'ONU à faire face aux crises complexes qui secouent le monde. Nous saluons la coopération étroite qui s'est établie entre le secrétariat de l'ONU et le Service européen pour l'action extérieure. Le soutien de l'Union européenne et de ses États membres aux activités de l'ONU se matérialise également dans leurs contributions qui s'élèvent à plus d'un tiers des contributions au budget ordinaire et au budget des opérations de maintien de la paix des Nations unies. Monsieur le Président, pour la première fois, grâce à l'initiative de la Lituanie, le Conseil de sécurité vient d'adopter une déclaration présidentielle qui reconnaît à sa juste valeur la coopération entre l'ONU et l'Union européenne au service de la paix et de la sécurité internationale. En tant que membres fondateurs à la fois des Nations unies et de l'Union européenne, nous ne pouvons que nous en réjouir. Depuis le dernier exposé de la haute représentante au Conseil, il y a un an presque jour pour jour, la diplomatie européenne a, comme il a déjà été rappelé ce matin, réussi à obtenir des résultats tangibles dans deux dossiers sensibles qui se trouvent également à l'ordre du jour du Conseil de sécurité. Le premier concerne le Kosovo. Je tiens à mon tour à féliciter la haute représentante pour la doigté et l'efficacité avec lesquelles elle continue de faciliter le dialogue de haut niveau entre Belgrade et Pristina. Ces efforts ont abouti à la conclusion le 19 avril 2013 du premier accord de principe régissant la normalisation des relations entre la Serbie et le Kosovo. Depuis, la mise en œuvre de cet accord historique s'est poursuivie à un rythme soutenu avec l'appui de la présence de l'Union européenne sur le terrain. Nous soutenons pleinement les efforts visant à normaliser durablement les relations entre les deux pays dans la perspective de leur avenir européen. Le deuxième dossier que je voudrais évoquer concerne le programme nucléaire iranien. Nous saluons là aussi l'énergie et le travail de la haute représentante dans le rôle dans la conduite des négociations entre l'Iran et les E3 plus 3 a été central pour aboutir au plan d'action conjoint agréé le 24 novembre 2013 à Genève. Nous saluons le début de la mise en œuvre du plan d'action le 20 janvier dernier. Il s'agit là d'un premier pas et, comme vous l'avez dit, d'un pas important sur le chemin qui doit mener au rétablissement de la confiance dans le caractère exclusivement civil et pacifique du programme nucléaire iranien. Monsieur le Président, la coopération entre les Nations unies et l'Union européenne est particulièrement développée en Afrique où elle se fait en partenariat avec l'Union africaine, les organisations sous-régionales et les pays concernés. Permettez-moi de mettre en exergue deux exemples à cet égard, la République centrafricaine et le Mali. En République centrafricaine, l'Union européenne contribue activement aux efforts de la communauté internationale pour régler la très grave crise sécuritaire et humanitaire. Après l'autorisation donnée par la résolution 2134 du Conseil de sécurité, l'Union européenne a décidé lundi dernier d'établir une opération militaire en RCA qui sera appelée à agir en étroite coordination avec la mission internationale de soutien à la Centrafrique sous conduite africaine et l'opération française Sangaris. Nous partageons pleinement les propos du secrétaire général quant à la nécessité et l'urgence pour ce Conseil et au-delà pour toute la communauté internationale de redoubler d'efforts pour mettre un terme à la violence et aux atrocités commises en RCA et à venir à ce pays meurtri et à ses populations, à toutes ses populations. Au Mali, l'Union européenne poursuit ses efforts en coordination étroite avec la MINUSMA pour soutenir les nouvelles autorités du pays. Elle a décidé de prolonger de 2 ans sa mission de formation IUTM Mali, qui permettra de donner aux Maliens les moyens d'assurer à terme leur propre sécurité. Comme la haute représentante l'a indiqué, l'Union européenne est également en train de préparer une mission civile d'appui aux forces de sécurité intérieure du Mali. Ces efforts s'inscrivent dans le cadre plus large de l'appui accordé par l'Union dans le cadre de sa stratégie intégrée pour le Sahel. Alors que l'ONU a développé sa propre stratégie intégrée pour la région, nous disposons maintenant d'une opportunité unique pour renforcer le partenariat entre la communauté internationale et les pays de la région du Sahel. Monsieur le Président, nous partageons la profonde préoccupation exprimée par la haute représentante quant à la situation dramatique en Syrie. Près de 10 millions de Syriens, dont la moitié des enfants, ont besoin d'une assistance humanitaire urgente. Nous nous félicitons de l'engagement que l'Union européenne et ses États membres qui se sont engagés à mobiliser 550 millions d'euros supplémentaires lors de la conférence des donateurs qui s'est tenue au Koweït le 15 janvier. L'Australie, la Jordanie et le Luxembourg ont pris l'initiative de présenter un projet de résolution appelant les parties au conflit syrien à améliorer l'accès humanitaire et à cesser les violations du droit international humanitaire telles que le recours à la famine et au siège comme arme de guerre contre les civils. Nous espérons que ce Conseil pourra adopter bientôt une résolution humanitaire qui aura aussi un impact positif, nous en sommes convaincus, sur les pourparlers en cours à Genève. Monsieur le Président, avant de conclure, permettez-moi de relever l'engagement de longue date de l'Union européenne en faveur de la protection des enfants en période de conflit armé. Nous nous félicitons de la décision d'affecter l'argent de son prix Nobel de la paix à des projets d'éducation en faveur des enfants victimes de conflits à travers l'initiative « Les enfants de la paix » qui a bénéficié l'an dernier à quelques 28 000 enfants. Le Luxembourg a été le premier pays à se joindre à cette initiative en décembre dernier avec une contribution de 500 000 euros. Dans le même contexte, je souhaite également mentionner la campagne de la représentante spéciale du secrétaire général pour les enfants et les conflits armés et UNICEF, intitulée « Children, not soldiers », qui sera lancée le 6 mars prochain à New York en présence du ministre des Affaires étrangères européennes du Luxembourg. Elle sera l'occasion de réaffirmer notre engagement à tous en faveur de la protection des enfants affectés par les conflits armés. Sur ce dossier, comme sur d'autres, vous pourrez compter sur le soutien du Luxembourg afin de développer la coopération entre l'Union européenne et les Nations unies au service d'un multilatéralisme efficace. Je vous remercie.
Je remercie aussi la représentante du Luxembourg. Maintenant, donne la parole au représentant de France.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le ministre. Merci beaucoup d'avoir organisé cette réunion et merci beaucoup d'y participer. Et je notais avec mon collaborateur que c'est le jour de la Saint-Valentin que les Nations Unies et l'Union européenne se rencontrent. J'y vois à l'évidence un signe. Je salue naturellement la haute représentante de l'Union européenne pour les affaires étrangères et la politique de sécurité. L'Union européenne s'est dotée d'outils originaux et d'une politique volontaire fondée sur une approche globale du règlement des crises. Et c'est plus que jamais en Afrique, cette Afrique qui occupe près de 70% du temps et de l'énergie du Conseil de sécurité, que l'Union européenne joue tout son rôle en faveur de la paix et de la sécurité, et le plus souvent en coopération avec les Nations unies. Au Mali, par exemple, l'Union européenne apporte son soutien à la refondation de l'outil de défense en parfaite complémentarité avec la MINUSMA. Le déploiement de la mission de l'Union européenne de formation des forces armées maliennes contribue au même objectif de restauration de la souveraineté malienne que la mission des casques bleus. Et nous avons pu récemment, le Conseil de sécurité, nous avons pu récemment rencontrer le commandant de l'opération de l'Union européenne à Bamako et nous avons pu constater l'efficacité de cette action. Mais naturellement, aujourd'hui, c'est la crise en République centrafricaine qui doit retenir notre attention. Depuis le mois de décembre, la présence militaire internationale n'a cessé de se renforcer dans le pays. L'effectif de la MISCA est passé de 2000 à 6000 hommes en quelques semaines. Et nous en sommes reconnaissants à l'Union africaine. Et cette force est appuyée, comme vous le savez, par 1600 Français de l'opération Sangaris. 1600 Français que le président de la République a décidé aujourd'hui de renforcer pour porter cet effectif à 2000 hommes. Elle le sera appuyée également bientôt par l'opération européenne EUFOR RCA, comme viennent de le décider les ministres européens des Affaires étrangères le 10 février. Cette opération apportera une contribution importante aux actions de sécurisation et de protection des populations civiles dans la région de Bangui. Il est essentiel que cette force européenne puisse se déployer rapidement et que les États membres de l'Union européenne se mobilisent pour y contribuer. L'implication de la haute représentante, mais aussi du secrétaire général des Nations Unies, pour convaincre les États membres encore réticents, est à cet égard essentielle. Tout retard de l'engagement de l'Union européenne serait incompréhensible. Jusqu'ici, grâce à l'action de la force africaine soutenue par les forces françaises, de nombreuses vies ont été sauvées et des massacres de grande ampleur ont pu être évités. Cependant, nous faisons face à une situation générale d'insécurité née de l'effondrement de l'État centrafricain. De quoi avons-nous besoin aujourd'hui en République centrafricaine ? D'abord, d'argent pour remettre au travail les fonctionnaires, en particulier les policiers et les gendarmes. Et ensuite, d'unités de police internationale. Car le défi auquel nous devons répondre nécessite aujourd'hui plus des policiers que des soldats. Des soldats ne peuvent contenir des foules ou protéger des individus. Sur tous ces sujets prioritaires, l'ONU, à travers le BINUCA, qui doit être renforcé, comme l'a demandé le Conseil de sécurité des Nations Unies, et dès que possible à travers une opération de maintien de la paix des Nations Unies, l'Union européenne, à travers l'importante coopération qu'elle met en œuvre en Centrafrique, toutes ces organisations ont un rôle essentiel à jouer. Elles agiront ensemble et avec les Africains pour permettre aux Centrafricains de vivre à nouveau en paix. Nous sommes dans une période charnière de la gestion de la crise en Centrafrique. Nous avons évité le pire, mais nous devons encore mettre un terme au cycle de violences ethniques et religieuses et éviter que ce pays ne sombre dans le chaos. Mais comme l'a dit le secrétaire général, il faut agir vite sur le front sécuritaire, sur le front politique, pour promouvoir la réconciliation nationale, lutter contre l'impunité et préparer les élections, et sur le front humanitaire. Cela demande des efforts de tous. L'Union européenne et les Nations unies devront faire plus. Ils devront le faire rapidement et de manière réaliste et créative. Nous attendons avec confiance l'engagement des Nations unies et de l'Union européenne dans une crise où leurs valeurs sont en jeu et où la France fait son devoir. Au-delà de son déploiement sur le terrain, l'Union européenne est aussi un partenaire précieux des Nations unies dans la recherche de solutions durables aux crises internationales. En Syrie, malgré le blocage persistant de ce Conseil, l'Union européenne s'est engagée résolument en faveur d'une transition démocratique en démontrant toute sa volonté. L'Union européenne a imposé depuis mai 2011 un large éventail de sanctions individuelles, financières et commerciales contre le régime. Elles étaient nécessaires et nous les applaudissons. Avec plus de 600 millions d'euros d'aide humanitaire, l'Union européenne et ses États membres sont le premier soutien de la population syrienne, y compris dans les pays voisins. Et l'Union européenne répond encore présente aujourd'hui pour apporter son concours au démantèlement de l'arsenal chimique syrien, en contribuant au fonds fiduciaire soutenant la mission conjointe de l'ONU et de l'OIAC créée à cet effet. De même, sur le dossier nucléaire iranien, nous remercions la haute représentante de son engagement exemplaire aux côtés des E3+3 afin de maintenir ouverte la porte du dialogue avec Téhéran. Ce sont les sanctions des Nations unies, mais ce sont aussi les sanctions de l'Union européenne qui ont permis le progrès que nous venons de constater. Avec l'adoption d'un plan d'action conjoint en novembre 2013, mis en œuvre dès janvier, la pertinence de cette approche a été démontrée. Le dialogue se poursuit désormais et l'Union européenne jouera tout son rôle dans la définition d'une solution de long terme. Enfin, cet idéal de paix que l'Union européenne cherche aujourd'hui à porter au-delà de ses frontières est déjà à l'œuvre dans son environnement proche. L'Union européenne joue son rôle au cœur même du continent, dans les Balkans autrefois ravagés par la guerre. Alors que des troubles ont émaillé ces derniers jours un certain nombre de villes de Bosnie-Herzégovine, il revient à l'Union de poursuivre ses efforts visant à la stabilisation et au développement économique de ce pays. En favorisant le dialogue bilatéral entre la Serbie et le Kosovo, l'Union européenne leur offre une possibilité de trouver leur place dans un espace qui les dépasse. Seule cette perspective leur permettra de tourner définitivement la page des conflits. Aussi, après la décision du Conseil de l'Union européenne en décembre, la première conférence intergouvernementale de négociation d'adhésion de la Serbie s'est-elle tenue le 21 janvier. La Serbie dispose maintenant de toutes les cartes pour rejoindre l'Union européenne. De même, la Commission a été autorisée à ouvrir les discussions avec le Kosovo pour la négociation d'un accord de stabilisation et d'adhésion. Monsieur le Président, je conclurai en rappelant que ce rôle particulier de l'Union européenne s'est traduit il y a 3 ans par l'adoption de la résolution 65-276 de l'Assemblée générale qui consacre la place de l'Union européenne comme partenaire et ami des Nations unies. Je voudrais souligner aujourd'hui, en rendant hommage à l'action de Mme Ashton depuis 4 ans, que l'Union européenne est plus qu'une simple organisation régionale. Elle est le pilier d'un système international cohérent et efficace. Elle est un groupement d'États engagé dans une aventure sans précédent et sans comparaison. Je vous remercie.
Je remercie le représentant de France and also would like to give a floor to the representative of United Kingdom.
Mr. President, Foreign Minister Linkevičius, I'd like to thank you for convening this meeting. I'd also like to thank both the Secretary General and Baroness Ashton for their statements and to express our full support for the presidential statement that the Council will adopt at the end of this meeting. I'd also like to say hello to some friends from Brussels, the city where my wife and I met. It is Valentine's Day. Today's meeting is an opportunity to take stock. The European Union and its member states have a common set of objectives on matters of international peace and security. Driven by the values that have been central to European integration following the Second World War, these objectives are also evident in the cooperation between the European Union and the United Nations. Today I wanted to focus on 3 themes: diplomatic engagement, responding to crises, and taking action. First, diplomatic engagement. At the outset, I really do want to pay tribute to Baroness Ashton and to her wider team for the role that they have played and are playing on 2 critical dossiers, Iran and Kosovo. On Iran, the United Kingdom welcomes the agreement of the joint plan of action between the E3+3 and Iran. Through the Office of the High Representative, the European Union played a crucial role in this process, and we look forward to the start of negotiations on a comprehensive solution next week. It's our firm belief that skilled diplomacy has only worked because of the economic pressure brought to bear on Iran through international sanctions. In order to negotiate a comprehensive agreement which addresses all our proliferation concerns, it is critical that this pressure is now maintained. On Kosovo, the European Union has played an instrumental role in facilitating several rounds of talks in Brussels between the Prime Ministers of Kosovo and Serbia, which resulted in the historic 19 April agreement on the normalization of the 2 countries' relations. This agreement was the result of painstaking diplomacy, the painstaking diplomacy that you have just described, and will aid the irrevocable progress of both countries towards the European Union, a process that will have a profound and lasting impact on the stability of the Western Balkans. In Bosnia and Herzegovina, the Foreign Secretary has expressed already his deep concern at the violence we saw in protests last week. The protests should be a wake-up call to all of us. We need a major international effort to bring the country closer to the European Union and to NATO, and to shore up its institutions and its territorial integrity. The United Kingdom is ready to play its part, and we are proud of our military contribution to EU4 Operation Althea. The recent protests demonstrate clearly that stability is not yet fully entrenched in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and the continued need for the safeguard which EU4 provides. Second, I wanted to turn to crisis response. The European Union has been a steadfast supporter of United Nations efforts, responding to a number of humanitarian crises. On Syria, the European Union has been working closely with the United Nations to provide the urgently needed financial support and humanitarian assistance so necessary today. A greater international effort is required, and we urge others to increase the levels of their contributions. Aid is necessary and more is needed, but the ability to deliver that aid to those who need it is currently undermined by a regime that is blocking and stalling, using blocking and stalling tactics. For this reason, the United Kingdom, with its partners in the Security Council, supports urgent progress on agreeing a resolution on the humanitarian situation. More widely, our position remains clear on other aspects of the transition. Assad has no future in Syria. This is something that the European Union has also been very clear on. On Somalia, the United Kingdom welcomes the partnership between the European Union and the United Nations. We're united in our support for a more stable and prosperous Somalia through our respective direct and indirect support to AMISOM, the UN mission in Somalia, and bilaterally. We should be proud of our efforts. For the first time in nearly two decades of extremism and poverty, Somalis have a hope for a better future. But our partnership in Somalia extends even further. The African Union's mission, AMISOM, has been at the heart of efforts to rid Somalis from the dark shadow of Al-Shabaab. The European Union's and the United Nations' support to AMISOM has enabled it to make progress, which even 5 years ago seemed unimaginable. The United Kingdom also welcomes the European Union training mission in Somalia, which has now trained over 3,000 Somali troops and continues to provide high-level support to the Somali National Forces. This is vital, because it is only through supporting Somalia's own security forces that a long-term solution to one of Africa's saddest stories has a happier future. Third and lastly, I wanted to look ahead to future action. And here I wanted to focus my remarks just on one place, the Central African Republic, following the Secretary-General's remarks. The imminent deployment of the EU mission will help address the security and humanitarian situation in the Bangui area, and working closely with the United Nations will help stop further deterioration. The policing component that Baroness Ashton described is a critical component of this, as is the strong cooperation between the European Union and the African Union on this issue, as well as many others that Nigeria and Chad both referred to. The United Kingdom has worked closely with our European partners to ensure that this was possible, and I strongly associate us with the remarks that France has made about the need for both creativity and realism for the next phase. Mr. President, in conclusion, these examples are just a small part of the significant and wide-ranging work that the European Union and the United Nations have delivered together in the past year. It shows the effect that we can deliver when we act in concert and from the same values-based start point. The United Kingdom will continue to play a full role in both organisations as we seek to tackle threats to international peace and security. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the representative of the United Kingdom. And now I'll give the floor to the representative of the Republic of Korea.
I will read my statement as fast as I can, as this is Valentine's Day and I'm the last speaker. Mr. President, I would first like to welcome you to the Security Council and thank you for convening today's briefing on this important issue. Our deep appreciation also goes to Secretary General Ban Ki-moon for his statement earlier. We also like to welcome High Representative Catherine Ashton back in the Council and thank her for the statement. The security challenges that confront us today clearly illustrate that effective cooperation between the UN and regional bodies is of crucial significance in managing crises across the globe. In this regard, the Republic of Korea highly appreciates that the European Union, as a reliable and responsible partner, is making substantial contributions to the work of the Security Council. The long experience of the European Union in the field of mediation and conflict management enables it to play an essential part in maintaining international peace and security. Especially noteworthy is the EU's role in bringing peace and security to the Balkans. The historic agreement reached by Belgrade and Pristina in April 2013 was a strong testimony to the EU's contribution to the peace process in the region. We would like to thank High Representative Ashton for her tireless effort in facilitating this process. Serbia and Kosovo are now at a critical juncture on their path towards normalizing relations. We look to both sides to step up their efforts at consolidating hard-won progress and encourage the EU to continue its active engagement on this front. Nuclear negotiations with Iran represent another area where the European Union has played a pivotal role. We commend the EU's efforts in reaching and implementing the interim agreement between the E3+3 and Iran. We look forward to Iran seizing this momentum and fully undertaking the measures in the joint plan of action to comply with the relevant Council resolutions. We also hope that the ongoing progress will lead to the final resolution of the Iranian nuclear issue and have a positive influence on other outstanding non-proliferation issues. The constructive role of the EU is also notable in that its contribution reaches beyond the regional boundaries. In the Central African Republic, the EU has once again demonstrated its partnership with the UN in addressing the serious crisis there. We welcome the last month OCHA and the European Commission co-organized a conference where donors pledged nearly $500 million towards humanitarian assistance in the CAR. We believe that the deployment of EU troops, according to Resolution 2134, will further consolidate the joint efforts towards early stabilization of the CAR. We also value the EU's role in the promotion of peace and economic development in the Sahel region, including Mali, in order to ensure progress towards the effective implementation of the United Nations integrated strategy for the Sahel, close cooperation between the EU and the UN will be instrumental. Also in Syria, we appreciate the EU's continued efforts to provide humanitarian assistance to the Syrian people and promote a political resolution to this crisis. I would like to conclude by expressing Korea's support for the active role played by the European Union in maintaining peace and security and hoping for continued close partnership between this Council and the European Union. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank the representative of Republic of Korea, but also to all representatives for their interventions. Once again, thank you very much, Cathy Ashton, for your very informative briefing. And also, once again, let me thank you for your presence here. And since it's last time, as I said, last year briefing in this Council, let me thank you for your personal contribution to the building of peace and security in all the world, or for your efforts in particular in the cooperation with the United Nations. The Security Council has concluded the present stage of its consideration of the item on this agenda. The meeting is adjourned.